Freedom. We all cherish freedom. One of the modern day miracles, the pursuit of freedom, a free country, to be free. Whereas once upon a time, we lived under the rule of monarchies, tyrants, sometimes benevolent, sometimes not. Freedom. But what exactly is freedom? Does it mean that you're not in a prison? That you're not bound by ball and chain? Can you have freedom of movement, but also at the same time really be enslaved? Look, today we have communications technology that's meant to emancipate us, free us. But how many of us are addicted, enslaved to our very gadgets? We have prosperity. We have comforts unprecedented. And yet, addictions of all sorts, physical, emotional, psychological. So though it's a great word, freedom, we also know that freedom has its challenges, and it's not so simple to be free. Even if not, you're not under the control of another person, you can still be under the control of forces that impose themselves upon you. So please join me in this important and vital pre-Passover discussion. When freedom is slavery. Hi, Simon Jacobson here, and we'll be discussing When Freedom is Slavery. This program is dedicated by Shoshana Weima in honor of her husband of blessed memory. Freedom, that very word, the march to freedom, the search for freedom, free at last, a cry that has resonated throughout history, but especially in the last few centuries when we've established free countries. Where once upon a time we were ruled by monarchs, by tyrants, by the church, by despots, by fascists, sometimes benevolent despots, but often not. But bottom line, we were not free to do whatever we wished. Freedom, the Bill of Rights, the first institutionalized free country, the United States of America, guaranteeing the rights, in the words of the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, and the Creator has endowed us with inalienable rights. And they are all in the category of freedom, freedom of expression, freedom of religion, free press, free speech. But what exactly is freedom? Is it simply the fact that someone else is not enslaving you? Is it simply that meaning that you're not in a prison, in a physical prison? That you're not tied by a ball and chain? Is freedom simply the absence of slavery? Or is it a power of its own? It's a very important question. Because we are free today in so many ways to express ourselves, to live as we see fit, to educate our children as we wish. And many parts of the world, Freedom House documents the countries that are free, that are semi-free, and that are still not free. And that's only growing, the free countries. So people can move about without any restrictions. No one is controlling you. But yet, are we really free? Take technology. communications. It's meant to emancipate us, free up our time, free up our ability, need to go travel. We can experience, communicate to each other instantaneously everywhere, every moment. They say all the time, well, everywhere, every place, every piece of knowledge, instantaneously. And yet, would you consider yourself free? Are you not enslaved, addicted to your very gadgets? We have an unprecedented rise, and in direct proportion, mind you, to our freedoms and our comforts, is the rise of addictions, opioid addiction, physical addictions, alcohol, drugs, psychological addictions, sex addictions, gambling, and so many others. Is addiction not slavery? Yes, it may not be another person, but it's a force. Who runs your life? And then when you think about your mind, our minds are meant to be free. Well, are we really free? Where are we getting our information from? How do we know what's truth, what's fiction, what's facts, and what's myth? False news. So we use our intelligence, but still, we get our sources from the media, which can be very biased, full of stereotypes, propaganda. Look at the narratives out there, the polarized narratives, literally opposite narratives. And you wonder, what's the truth? So is that freedom? So freedom is a very elusive word, a very mysterious word, actually. Because yes, we all understand the physical meaning of freedom, that you are free to move about, and you're not in behind bars, and someone else has the key to your mobility. There are people who have all the money in the world and can do anything they like, but they're completely not free. Their minds are not free. Their hearts are not free. They're filled with anxiety, depression, resignation. And then there are people who may not have that many resources, but they're free. Their spirits are free. So as we're approaching Passover, the festival, the holiday of freedom, it's good to think about these ideas. Because the fact of the matter is, prosperity, comfort, and freedom itself can be maybe the worst type of slavery of all. Because it's one thing when you're enslaved by a master. Terrible. Master controls your movement, controls your, you can't decide on your own. Completely controlled by another. I'm talking about a real slave. Even if it's a kind master, but you're not in control, the master is. And when you think of slavery back in Egypt and slavery in recent history, the black slavery in the beginning part of this country's history, American history, other parts of the world, or slaves even today that exist. So that is very obvious, the slavery, and very obvious the oppression and the injustice. Why should one person control another person? Both created by God. Why are you in control of me? But when it comes to more subtle forms of slavery, when I say subtle, I don't mean weaker, but they're not so obvious. You could move about. You could create the illusion of freedom, and yet you're enslaved by your psychological insecurities and fears. That can be far more insidious, far more cancerous, far more toxic. Precisely because it's invisible, because it's beneath the surface. It's not as obvious. And I'm not suggesting that the first type of slavery is better, but it's more obvious and it's clear. This person needs to be freed. They're enslaved. My experience in life, I've met many people. People have many resources, materially successful, but I've never seen tremendous slavery as like we have today. Some of the people that are most successful on the material level are the most enslaved. I remember speaking to someone who's in the billionaire category. And he told me, I have no friends. All the friends I once had, I don't know if they're my friends, or they want something from me. They want money. So I don't really trust anymore. I'm wary of anyone that speaks to me. Even people I knew well long before I had money. Is this person free? Yes, he's free as a private jet. He can do whatever he wishes. He can buy whatever he wishes. And indeed, he actually has people who work for him. I won't call them slaves, but they're butlers and chauffeurs and maids and assistants who have to follow his orders. He happens to be a nice guy, but at times he can behave very abusively too. So I see slavery right there. It's not the same slavery. It doesn't whip them, and they probably have rights. But what will they do for the money that they get from him? Humiliation and other things. But is he free? He doesn't have a friend. He can't even trust his own family. He says that everybody wants a piece of money. And when I share with him, why don't you share spiritual values? He says, they don't want to hear spiritual values from me. They only see me as one thing, a bank. And how could they ingratiate themselves and how can they manipulate me to get a few extra bucks? That's his life. His own family. Now, do I not wish upon him all this wealth? God bless him. But you see there, right there, the example. You all remember Howard Hughes. Howard Hughes, one of the wealthiest people in the United States. What is his story? His tragic end of his story. Becomes a recluse, paranoid, afraid of germs. So a man that could buy anything was locked in his own castle. Everybody knows, some consider the best Hollywood film, Citizen Kane. It's meant to be the story of Randolph Hearst, the great publisher. Citizen Kane, again, trapped in his castle, in his palace. Searching for Rosebud, for the innocence of his childhood. So you see from this that the very blessings of what is called freedom and prosperity has another side to it. That doesn't mean it guaranteed to cause you to become enslaved, but it means it doesn't guarantee you true freedom. So what then is the elusive ingredient of true freedom? So let's analyze even further this idea of freedom. Interesting paradox, irony. The more comfortable you are, the freer you are, the more prosperous you are. Prosperous. The more apathetic you become about values, about what you're ready to fight for. You don't need to. I'm comfortable. Where do you see values crystallize? Under pressure, under deadlines, under oppression. So it's interesting. In the very slavery of Egypt was born the greatest freedom of all. Because then you appreciate it. And you fight for it. And you fight for your values. The greatest wars in history were because there were values that were being challenged. When they're not challenged, we take them for granted. Ask an average young man and woman living in a free country like the United States or other such countries. What do you stand? What are you ready to fight for? What are you ready to die for? And I don't mean physically die. I mean ready to completely, committed, absolutely, not optional. The answers will surprise you, and they're quite sad. Some will talk about video games. Some will talk about sex and sexuality. Some will talk about their team that they are fans of, a sports team. Some will talk about their entertainment. You're rarely going to hear, I fight for the freedom of human beings, for morality, for moral clarity. Unless you're challenged. And of course there are exceptions. So is that the fact of reality of life, that you have to suffer? You need tragedy, you need slavery, you need some form of oppression and affliction, some form of duress in order to crystallize what you're ready to fight for? I would hope not, but that's the case in most situations. Because comfort zones, for all their beauty, and we all love comfort zones, it means being comfortable, creates apathy, indifference, complacency. Like the guy asked his friend, what's worse, apathy or ignorance? He said, I don't know and I don't care. It's a kiss of death apathy. When you know you have an adversary, so there's an enemy. Like I said before, it's obvious. You fight your enemy. But apathy is like you're sharing a life-shattering experience an earth-shattering experience in your life with someone, and they fall asleep or they yawn on you, and you say, what do you think? Okay, can you repeat that again? At least there's someone that opposes you. There's a sign of life, but apathy is the kiss of death. Cold, paralyzed, complacent. That's what grows out of comfort zones. That's why comfort zones are never going to be a catalyst for growth. And you think it makes no sense. One second, you're comfortable. There's no war. There's no challenge. Now's the time to grow. It's the absurdity of human nature. Yes, the absurdity of human nature to take for granted what we have. And there's always tomorrow. Unless we're pressured. Competition. A deadline. You have something to lose. This is where freedom, with all its blessings, can become true slavery. I've quoted this fascinating talk delivered by Admiral Herman Rickover. He was a 4-star admiral in the United States Navy. 4-star is the highest you can get, generally speaking. He came to the United States as running away from the pogroms in Eastern Europe. A Jew. Chaim was his name. Herman Rickover. Herman or Hyman? Hyman Rickover. And he gave a talk in, I think it was 1956, where he spoke about energy. One key point. That in 1856 to 1956, in that century, in 1856, 92% or something like that, 90-some percent of energy was generated by humans or animals. In 1956, 100 years later, 90-plus percent of energy generated by fossil fuels and machines. That's not a small shift. And he speaks about two key consequences. One is the explosion, the acceleration, skyrocketing of wealth. Because now everything becomes exponentially growing so much more. When you just control the buttons, you produce so much more. So even if you controlled all the farms in 1856 or earlier, okay, it can make you wealthy. But now you're controlling all those buttons, the industrial buttons, so to speak. So wealth skyrocketed. The second thing, the birth of free time, of leisure. He doesn't talk about that so much. I want to. Leisure. Once upon a time, you worked 9 hours a day under the hot sun in a field in order to produce a bushel of wheat, of rice, of potatoes, simply to have dinner for you and your family, and then perhaps trade the excess, whatever you had left. Once all that was being produced by machines, you no longer have to toil. What happens with the time? So yes, we build other careers, but a lot of time was freed up. And as things accelerated, and evolved much faster. Look today. You can sit in your home, press a button, and have an Amazon delivery within 30 minutes of anything. And now with AI and new technologies constantly being developed, you can easily foresee a time where you can do almost nothing all day and get everything you need. Which is essentially the progress of science. That less energy invested, more return. The ROI keeps growing and the investment is a less one, energy-wise, effort-wise, time-wise. So what do we do with all this leisure? The birth of leisure. Now I need to fill it up. So the world of entertainment exploded, and the world of distractions, and the world of nonsense, I would say, and destructive stuff. Who had time 200 years ago when you're toiling in a field to say I'm depressed and I need to smoke some pot or take some other drugs in order to get myself a little lift? Who had time? You didn't even have time to be depressed. So I'm not suggesting turning the clock back, but there you have it. As we become freer, we become also more enslaved. And the reason for that is not because freedom is slavery, because freedom without a higher sense of purpose gives you a lot more free time, but it does not necessarily free you. So the key thing that's missing is that purpose that precedes freedom and precedes slavery. When the Jewish people were enslaved in Egypt, they had a vision. They had a promise that they all knew that ultimately, as difficult as it was, they would get out of this God-forsaken place. They would be free and they would be able to connect to transcendent values. So as much as they were oppressed, there was a freedom in their mouths, in their hearts, in their souls, knowing we will be out of this place. And they never let go. Even when they were free, they did not become complacent. And when they did, then they became enslaved again. Spiritually, psychologically, emotionally. So it's not freedom per se. Freedom is a great blessing to get out of prison and not have anyone oppress you and you have all the time in the world. But what are you going to do with that time? If that time is wasted, because now, you know, no pressure. So what makes you really free? You're just free, technically free. True freedom of the heart and soul is when you stand for something that's greater than yourself. You're free from your ego and your arrogance and your pursuits of self-interest. Because as much as that may satisfy you, but that is not true freedom. True freedom is being able to be the true self that you are. The definition of true freedom is that no force imposes itself. It's you that's expressing yourself. Not as affected by parents and educators and society and media, trying to in some way seduce, brainwash you, program you, advertise to you to get you to buy their product or to get you to do what they want. And that requires soul. So when we are actually oppressed, they have no place to turn to but your soul. When we're not oppressed, we can convince ourselves, hey, I'm free. That's when we need the soul more than ever. And soul means mission, a mission-centric life. Why are you here? To serve. You're not just here to indulge. You're not here to take, you're here to give. When a person has that ingrained within them, then whether they are physically enslaved or not, they will be truly free. And whether they're free or not, meaning free, physically free, they will truly be free. Not just mechanically or technically free. Because they're connecting to something that is beyond themselves, beyond the mortal, something eternal, something lasting, something permanent. That's what true freedom is, and that's the true celebration of freedom. The ability to transcend our mortal and our limited parameters. And indeed, that is why it's called Yetziat Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt. In Hebrew, Egypt is Mitzrayim, which means constraints. Mitzar, distress, it means dire straits, narrowness, all the things that limit, inhibit, and don't allow us to really be ourselves. So there's the physical limitation, someone's holding you down, someone's tying you down, someone's keeping you in prison or enslaved. But then there's spiritual limitations where you don't have the courage, fear, insecurity, being judged, afraid of being criticized. All of that adds up to a deep psychological enslavement where you really never spread your wings and you don't experiment, you don't take a risk, you're afraid. That's the true celebration. The great Maharal of Prague, Rabbi Yehuda Lowy, writes that the freedom from Mitzrayim, from Passover, was not just a physical one. It was a psychological one. That once they were free, they became free forever. They can never be enslaved again because we are no longer bound to other human beings and their institutions. Like Mordechai would never bow. We don't bow to people. We bow to something greater beyond the mortal, to the immortal, to the eternal, to a higher reality. And therefore, no human being can frighten us. One of the most powerful stories I share so often, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, the sixth Chabad Rebbe. He was imprisoned, enslaved, yes, by the Jewish communists called the Yevsektsiya, the Bolsheviks, who were the worst of all anti-Semites. And they oppressed him. These were people who, their great-grandparents or grandparents, were actually Hasidim of the Rabbi Schneerson's grandparents. But they had become assimilated and they began hating themselves and hating their own identity. And the Rebbe had made a decision, as he writes in his diary, called, of all things, the tractate from hell. He called it Masechta Gehenim, because it was hell. He was being tortured in ways that affected him for a long time, for the rest of his life. He refused to cooperate. He said in his spirit, in his psyche, he knew even cooperating, budging one inch would already be his demise. So he wouldn't surrender. He insisted on having his talis and his tefillin. He insisted on speaking Yiddish, though he spoke Russian. One of the captors, the Jewish ones, pointed a gun to his head and said, Rebbe, enough with this. This thing here, this pistol, this gun, has changed many a mind. And the Rebbe looked at him, unflinching, without hesitation. He says to them calmly, this toy, this tzatzke, that's what it's called in Yiddish, tzatzke, toy. This pistol, he called it a toy. Can frighten someone that has one world and many gods. Every day another god. Today he worships this desire, tomorrow that pleasure, this, we'll call it addiction. He has all kinds of gods. But it cannot frighten someone that has one god and many worlds, or two worlds. Diversification. I didn't put all my eggs in one basket. Diversification. Of course the Rebbe wanted to live. But you're going to frighten me? You're going to take my life? I have a soul. I have a family. I have a legacy. I have a community. I have a students, constituents. I have a philosophy that has lived here and will continue to live. You can't frighten me. That's a true free person, even though he had the gun. So the guy responded, the Jewish Jew hater, self-hater, says to the Rebbe, we shall see who will prevail, in Yiddish, mind you. And the Rebbe looks at him and says, yes, we shall see who shall prevail. Within a few weeks, that guy was shot, which was common. Everything was there. You know, remember, whatever you dish out comes back around. He was shot. The Rebbe was miraculously freed from prison and ultimately left Russia, left the Soviet Union, went to Europe, went to Poland, to Latvia, and ended up in the United States in 1940. In a wheelchair, yes, he was hurt, but his resolve, his spirit, stronger than ever. A person like that is the freest person on earth. So he was free in prison, and he was free outside of prison. Even outside of prison, did not become complacent, continued fighting that war. That's the challenge. To not be apathetic in our freedoms, in our comforts. Yes, we're in a time now that we're reminded, the war in Gaza, the attack now by Iran and Israel, and other events in the world that remind us that shake us out of our reverie and our complacency. They strip us of our security blankets and comfort zones. They disrupt. And they force us to have to stand up. What do you stand for? But we shouldn't have to wait for moments like this. But now that we have it, it's a wake-up call, a universal, global wake-up call. And soon, very soon, when things will stabilize and we will come back to what we'll call normal, forever, hopefully, let's not forget the lesson. Do not become apathetic, because that is slavery. Do not become complacent. Do not become indifferent. Do not let yourself become enslaved to yet another master, this time not a physical master, but a psychological one, emotional one, a commercial one, a financial one, and everything else that is being sold to us. That if you don't have that, you're not going to be complete, making us ultimately more miserable. The freedom from within, that I am an ambassador of the infinite. I'm an ambassador of the divine with an indispensable mission to illuminate and transform the corner of my world. That is the free person. And everything that comes my way, the blessings, the open reveal blessings, and even the challenges, and even from time to time, maybe, yes, the oppressions, do not enslave me, because they're all part of helping me fulfill my mission, of motivating me, of inspiring me, of teaching me. Everything is a lesson. This is the free person. So nothing can enslave a person like that. Not only slavery, but even freedom can't enslave a person like that, because that's what they stand for. And the freedom is just a gift. That now I don't have an outside force that's controlling me or trying to control me or trying to oppress me or overtax or discriminate or hurt or torture me. That's a great blessing. But what do I do with that blessing? I now use my freedom to truly experience the highest transcendent realities and bring it to others, to be kinder than ever, more loving than ever. That the freedoms actually create a far better world. And we fight for that, just as when we fought against darkness. So freedom is not the absence of slavery alone. Far, far more than that. And that's what we're fighting for. When we say a free world of redemption, personal and global redemption. What is redemption? Redeem. Redemption means exactly that. To not be trapped in the parameters of our limited, narrow, myopic tunnel vision, and be able to see broader horizons, to be able to connect to the infinite, to connect that which is beyond the usual structures, and then channel that into our lives. And we do that not by becoming hoarders, taking, filling ourselves up, but on the contrary, giving, breathing, connecting. Love, the transcendence of self and self-interest, is what draws those higher forces into our lives. And that is freedom, the ultimate freedom. And when you have love and you have that connection, nothing can trap you. I'm not saying it isn't difficult at times. But above all, nothing can trap you. Even freedom itself, physical freedom, won't trap you, because you will have that cause to fight for. I grew up around people like this. My Rebbe, son-in-law of the Rabbi Schneerson I mentioned, my father and others that I've seen, were people who went through a lot of fire in their lives. Stalinist Russia, then later in Europe. Stalinist Soviet Union, I should say, later in Europe. Difficult. But when they did experience freedom, they never became complacent. They continued the fight. Now it's not a fight against a physical enemy. It's a fight against the enemy of apathy, the enemy of just taking it easy, doing nothing. It's always tomorrow. And I'll conclude with that, one of my favorite jokes. The guy, the older man, sitting on a bench, all depressed, and his friend comes over. He says, "Why are you so depressed today, Jack?" He says, "My wife is very angry at me." "Oh, nothing new. She's always angry at you." "No, today's something special." "What happened?" "This morning she went to work and she looked at me and said, 'What are you going to do, Jack?' And I said, 'Nothing.' And she said, you said that yesterday, that you're going to do nothing. And I responded, I wasn't finished. I didn't finish doing nothing. It's become an objective, people an ideal, to be a couch potato. I'm not doing anything. The antithesis, the exact diametric opposite of human nature to be mobile. We breathe all the time. Imagine your breathing system decides to do nothing, God forbid. Your heart, contraction, expansion. Breath, inhale, exhale, 18 times a minute, 12 times a minute, depending on how healthy you are. Always mobile. There's nothing as nothing inanimate. There's nothing doing nothing. But that's what comforts do. I'm doing nothing, nothing. It's all good, doing nothing. Let's do some nothing. Let's do nothing together. Let's do a lot of nothing. The war continues on against that apathy to crystallize and to reveal the deeper values we stand for. That is what a true Passover is. And I believe the war being fought right now in the Middle East is really about that. It's true. It began as defense against monsters, savages, who brutally, in the most brutal fashion, tortured, killed. I won't go into the details. Innocent men, women, and children. So we don't want that to ever happen again. But it's far more than that. We're not just fighting against our enemies. We're fighting for something, for a vision, a moral clarity, a moral compass for the entire world. 8 billion people, for everyone, including the misguided and the distorted and their children and their school systems, that we can say proudly that this year Passover is different than any year. Why is this night different than all other nights? Manishtana. Because we've woken up to the reality of what is right and what is wrong. Doesn't mean any of us are perfect. But we're all children of God's. We're all created in the divine image. And we need to be seeking out our mission. That is what will free us. Not hurting someone else. Not violence. Not anger. Find your calling in this world and spread it. Inspire others. Bring light to the world. Light dispels darkness. So may this be a true holiday of freedom and redemption more than ever before, and one that will extend and continue long after the holiday into a permanent redemption once and for all, where nations will not raise swords one against another. There will be no more evil and destruction because the world will be filled with divine knowledge as the waters cover the sea. And each of us can do something in this regard. One good thought, one good word, one good action tips the scales, the tipping point, and transforms and brings personal and global redemption. You and I can do that. Let us join together in this noble, historical, and unprecedented effort in these unprecedented times. Thank you so much. Experience real freedom from within and without, material and spiritual, on all possible levels. Be you in your full divine glory. This has been Simon Jacobson, Meaningful Life Center. MeaningfulLife.com is our website where you can check out this and many other programs. Please subscribe to our offering, subscribe to our YouTube channel, share with others if you found this meaningful. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, your feedback, your comments, suggestions. And please help us in every possible way, both by sharing. We could also use your financial support and your partnership. Just go to meaningfullife.com/donate. You can sponsor our program, series of programs. Much, much appreciated. But in any possible way, let us partner together and create more than the sum of the parts, a harmony within the diversity, a beautiful cosmic musical symphony where all of us are contributing our indispensable note and all of us complement each other. Thank you again and be well.
This program is brought to you by the Meaningful Life Center. Please help us continue our programs. Make even a small contribution at meaningfullife.com/donate.